Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and today's conversation is with Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Dominance and Director of Naval Intelligence. Also joining us from IBM is Chris Lyons. Admiral, the U.S. military depends on access to the global commons to project influence and power. To that end, would you explain the concept of information dominance? What are its key components, and how does it differ from information superiority in a naval context?
In our mind, information dominance is about using information to win on the battlefield, to enable our national decision makers, our operational commanders, and units who and individuals who need information, enable them to take action to either prevent conflicts or to win in a crisis. In our thinking, information dominance is that you're taking information and the various disciplines associated with information, elevating them in importance, and thinking differently about how information elements are connected. So for an example, it's easy to stovepipe electronic warfare and treat that completely different from cyber warfare, activity on networks. But in a future environment where the electromagnetic spectrum is a battle space in itself, you need to think across the entire range of information disciplines, because when you think only in a stovepipe fashion, you miss opportunities. Calls to mind the book The Medici Effect by Franz Johansson. He talks about when you bring different skills together, when you bring different expertise and functions together, like the Medici family did in 16th century Florence. They brought painters, artists, sculptors together, and they created new capability. That's what you're seeking, a flourishing of innovation within the Navy and specifically associated with information capabilities. And if I could give you an example, back in the Civil War, Stonewall Jackson in the Shenandoah Valley Campaign in 1862 did a fantastic job of knowing the territory. He knew the geography. He also had a series of spies that kept track of the Union forces. So he had, in essence, in 1862, information dominance or information superiority over the Union forces. Well, we're basically taking that very simple concept, and as you move into the information age, ensuring it's not just about geography, not just about oceanography for us, but all meteorological and oceanographic data and information, all information about the adversary, information about our own command and control capabilities and weapon systems, and bringing that together to have, we call it dominance over a potential adversary. And specifically, your question about information dominance or information superiority, you know, you can get into an academic discussion on definitions, but we use the term information dominance because that's what we think our nation expects us to have in a time of war, dominance over a potential adversary.
So would you outline the initial guiding principles that frame your strategic endeavor? And to what extent have those principles informed the development of the Navy strategic roadmap for information dominance?
Michael, one of the things I'm a big believer in is whenever you start any endeavor, you need to have a set of guiding principles. So we worked pretty hard when we stood up the organization and said, you know, what are those things that are going to guide us? They're going to be common and critical for our future. So we have a whole list. It's probably close to 15 or so, but I'll give you the top 7 or 8 or so. The first one is we believe that every platform must become a sensor. And by that, we mean if you've got a ship or an aircraft out there, if you don't put a sensor or a series of sensors on those platforms, then you've missed an opportunity to collect information to ensure that our commanders have better situational awareness. We think every sensor has to be networked. In pre-information age days, we've had platforms that were not networked, that only collected information for the sake of that particular individual platform. In this era, you can't afford to do it. Information that comes from one platform on one side of the globe may be critical to a national decision back in the Washington, D.C. area. We believe that every shooter or every weapon system that we have needs to be able to take targeting data from any other sensor. So that gets into the issue of interoperability of data flows. We believe that our aircraft and planes and submarines must have a plug-and-play sensor payload capability. What that means is we can't have proprietary information systems that various contractors have. We need to have a mechanism that permits complete interoperability. We also believe that we're going to, as a principle, transition from primarily manned to more unmanned and autonomous capabilities, not exclusively, because we still have a role for individuals, for people in this, but more unmanned and autonomous capabilities. And I've already touched on this issue of commonality of interfaces, data links, and control stations. The CNO also has given us an additional principle recently, and he said, you know, we need to build a little and test a lot because our acquisition system is so cumbersome. If you wait to deliver something after a 7 or 8 year acquisition process and you don't experiment a little along the way, you might end up with something that shoots behind the target, that doesn't deliver what you're really expecting in the future. In terms of our principles, you've mentioned our strategic roadmaps that we're creating for information. The principles are the underlying foundation. Once you get the principles down, then it's easy to start building the architecture and then the roadmap and the vector that you want to send the Navy in. If you get the principles wrong, they'll tend to send you in a different direction. So we spent a fair amount of time in developing these principles.
Admiral, information technology is driving dramatic change and leading to an explosion in the volume of information, thereby creating both opportunities and challenges. In fact, the National Intelligence Council reported, "The growing importance of information technologies will make information itself a primary target in future conflicts." Would you outline some of the significant cyber and network threats and challenges facing the U.S.?
Chris, your question hits home to, I think, what is one of the most important questions of our day. And it's much more significant than just applicable to the U.S. Navy. It's applicable to the entire government. And that is, in an increasingly interconnected world, how do you increase access to vast volumes of information while protecting your own information, protecting your own networks and communications and command and control systems? So within the Navy, we see two current types of cyber threats. And to avoid going into great levels of classification, I'll just tell you that those are hackers, individuals who are trying to access computer systems for fun or for sport or to do some type of nuisance disruption. But individuals that are not affiliated with nation states or terrorist or extremist groups. And then you have adversaries that are true adversaries that are trying to disrupt, destroy, or steal your information. Those can be nation states. Those can be extremist groups. And we see both of those types of entities that are posing a clear threat to us today. This is something that's really critical, not just for the Navy, but for the entire U.S. government and even for our industry partners out there and other agencies. Because you look at this threat, the threat to the U.S. banking, financial institutions, to our transportation networks, to our food distribution networks, when you think of how automated it is to take food and distribute it from the heartland to coastal cities, it relies on communications and computer systems. So all nations face the potential that hackers and others can disrupt their command and control capabilities.
Thank you, Admiral. U.S. dominance in the information arena is clearly at risk. In what specific ways are current and potential adversaries applying information technologies and operations to counter U.S. military strengths and preferred mode of warfare?
Let me give you a couple specific examples. I think that's probably the best way to explain. In December 2006, a hacker, perhaps even a series of hackers, accessed unclassified computer systems at the U.S. Naval War College. That's up in Newport, Rhode Island. The hacking resulted in what we call a denial of service. You couldn't access your computer system at the War College. And that was a denial of service that lasted for about a week or so. That led to the system operators having to take the computer systems down completely, purge it of the bad virus that basically was applied to the computer, and then cleanse it and then bring it back online. So at the Naval War College, we didn't have access to computer systems for about a week. That's one example at a very low end of the scale of problems that can exist. Another example is in June of 2007, when Department of Defense computers in the Pentagon were inflicted with a computer virus. That also caused a denial of service. Over 1,500, as I understand it, 1,500 computers were shut down. Similarly, they were cleansed and then brought back online. And that attack also took over a week to correct. So various elements of the Department of Defense didn't have computers available for their daily use. Another example, a little bit more sophisticated, July 2009, in which a botnet is a large number of interconnected computers that are employing malicious software. That botnet was used to attack U.S. and South Korean government websites. The websites were overloaded, and that caused them to crash. The attack took place. It began on the 4th of July, 2009, and it not only affected Department of Defense, but Department of State, White House computers, as well as government computers in South Korea. So those were unclassified systems that were affected. I think the other important point that I can give you is that these types of malicious activity is occurring on a daily basis. These three examples had a more significant impact, but we're having to protect our computer systems on a daily basis.
Along with facilitating actionable intelligence, your larger mandate is to take a holistic approach to how the Navy manages and resources its information capabilities. What is specifically being done to transform the use of information from simply being an enabler to becoming a core warfighting capability? What are some of the institutional barriers in the success of this effort, and how are you working to break down these areas?
Well, I appreciate that question. It brings to mind a quote from Niccolo Machiavelli, who was a 16th century Italian philosopher and political scientist. Machiavelli said, "There's nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its success than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things." And how true that is, because this creation of information dominance focus within the Navy is truly a revolutionary idea and concept, I think, for the Navy, something that we've been toying with along the ways, but it took Admiral Ruffhead and his leadership to bring it all to bear and move boldly in this arena. So we're taking an overarching look at information. I've mentioned it previously, breaking down the stovepipes and really trying to address information in its wholeness so that we deliver a unique and different capability more than the sum of its parts, I guess, is the way to describe it. We've achieved some significant successes over the last 9 months since we've been working on that. We've improved our electronic warfare capabilities, moved out rather smartly in unmanned systems, and have improved or at least stabilized some afloat communications problems, although we still have a long way to go there. The institutional barriers are nothing unique to the Navy. It's barriers that you'll see anywhere when you're trying to transform an institution. What we've seen initially, I think, were some individuals with rigid mindsets or individuals who were uncomfortable with changing from the status quo. Easy to overcome that. Take some time, though, and easy to overcome because it takes dialogue, discussion, and as you start making achieving some successes, you'll see individuals with perhaps more rigid mindsets start coming out of their shell and moving forward. Doesn't mean you bring everybody on board, but you certainly get a momentum. The other thing is individuals who grew up in a single discipline, and you're now asking them to branch out and operate outside of their comfort zone. Maybe people that don't have rigid mindsets might have open mindsets, but if they're still used to their unique discipline, you're going to challenge them. That's, again, something that can be overcome with progress, with momentum, with success. I sort of see success builds on success in that arena. And then the final challenge that I've really seen is the individuals, because we did realign resources, individuals who lost resources were a bit uncomfortable early on and were threatened by that. My perspective is those people who lost things went through the five stages of loss. They denied it. They were angry. They bargained. They were depressed. And ultimately, they're largely accepting. But that occurs in any organization where you shift resources from one place to the other.
Admiral, to deliver dominant information capabilities, the Navy requires a highly skilled information-centric workforce. You've mentioned the Information Dominance Corps. What are the core capabilities you are focusing in on for that cadre? And could you tell us a little bit more about the Corps?
The Corps, 45,000 people strong. It's made up of oceanographers, meteorologists, information professionals. Those are folks that work with communications, command and control, our network managers. Information warfare professionals who are SIGINT professionals, signals intelligence, cryptologists. They deal with other elements of information operations. Naval intelligence professionals. These are civilians, enlisted officers across the board in these various disciplines. One of the key components of the Corps in terms of what we expect is we expect each individual to deepen their professional skill. Then when individuals become more senior, especially at the officer level, we expect them to start broadening their skill sets and understanding information capabilities across more disciplines. So early on in a career, you're going to focus on electronic warfare, or you might focus on network operations or oceanography. By the time you become a captain, we expect those officers to then have understanding of cyber, intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, to be able to lead a future Navy that requires all of these elements of information to be brought together.
As a follow-up, I'd like to know what your vision is for recruiting, hiring, or educating, and then retaining such a world-class workforce in the information area. Does the Navy have to do anything to sort of change its personnel process in order to achieve success in this area?
We absolutely do. In the information arena, the true experts are really highly sought after. Clearly, industry, the civilian sector, go out and can pay a sizable amount of money for people who are really experts in the information arena. Within the Navy, we don't have the same luxury of resources to be able to pay people, but we do offer a dedicated service to the nation. We do offer opportunities to advance and progress as you move forward. So we've looked at our training, education, and recruiting mechanisms, and we realize that we need significant overhaul of them for these professionals of the future. Part of our current structure will still work for part of the workforce, but for a more specialized portion of the workforce, and let's just take cyber experts, for example, we are looking to create alternatives. We have created a new cadre of, we call them cyber engineers. We are going to hire 5 of them per year, just a very small group of people, and we expect them to be world-class in the cyber engineering arena. And we will incentivize them. We will take care and groom those individuals. And that is just one near-term example of what we're doing. We're also creating a cyber curriculum at the U.S. Naval Academy. They have a cyber center there. We've already done that at the Naval Postgraduate School. We are creating reserve centers with information dominance focus in some of the high-tech locations around the United States. And we're trying to figure out how do you bring a reservist, for example, someone who is really highly skilled, very professional, how do you bring them in to help us in the Navy? You can't bring them in a typical traditional reserve structure because they may have long hair and not want to get their hair cut and be in the Navy. But you know what they may want to do? They may want to serve the country, and some of them will. So we are looking at new and unique ways to deal with those experts, and we are just at the beginning stages of the discussion and dialogue. But I am convinced that not only the Navy, but the other services and other elements of the U.S. government are going to have to tackle this same issue. We're going to have to tackle it together because the workforce, the pool of bodies that are experts in these areas, is finite.
How is the Navy transforming the way it looks at information? We will ask Vice Admiral Jack Dorsett, Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Dominance and Director of Naval Intelligence, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.